Dear friends, as we gather together, it is the triune God, a Father, that has put us into this world. He's given us life. And He hasn't abandoned us. He sent His Son at just the right time in the perfect way to be our Redeemer. And the Spirit that has engaged our hearts through the Word and Sacrament to hear and believe. Are you crazy? Jump! How many of you are afraid a little bit of heights? I want to see your hands. Just even a little bit afraid of heights. Yep. You know, it's one of those things that just happens, and sometimes you wonder why people do it. I really have to say that about my brother-in-law. You know, he's a military guy, but he said on the second story of a mall, when he starts to approach the railing and he can see over it, he feels like he's going to run right up and jump. He feels like he's going to fall, so he has to back away and brace. So why, on his bucket list, does he have skydiving? I used to think I'd like to do that. When I was a young man, it was kind of popular to hang glide. And I actually was going to try it in Alaska, didn't get the chance. And then that same summer, a young man that I knew, friends with, actually fell. He did not die or get paralyzed, but he was broken. He broke his back in a couple places. So that and being a father made me just kind of sober up a little bit. So here's my brother-in-law. He's going to do his thing. He signs up. And because he's a newbie, he's right next to the instructor. There's two others that can solo behind them. And they're on the plane. He said, I was just really doing well until we got on the plane. Okay. So they take off and they're flying back and forth because it's a little plane. And they climb slow but sure to 15,000 feet. And he says, then the instructor whips open the door of that Lego-sized plane and says, we're going to jump. And then he said something that scared me a little bit. He said, look out there. And he said, that I should never have done that. All I saw was sky and down. And, of course, at that point, he said, I thought I should have probably brought a little more protection than a parachute. Probably something like a diaper. And just like that, the instructor grabbed him and they jumped. He pulled him out and they're out in the air. And he goes, have you ever been out in a place where you've never been before and still feel confident? He said, I screamed for the first 30 seconds. You know, it's a lot like that in life. What is your 15,000 foot challenge? Is it reconciliation in a relationship that you know you should step forward? You should be the one to say, I'm sorry, do the first thing, move in and work it through, but you just aren't sure you can? Is it that endurance that you need to hang on to your morals when everybody else around seems to have lost theirs? Is it that unconditional love, to love a man or a woman who doesn't deserve it? Is it perhaps something as simple as biblical giving, that I know that I can be, I could be, maybe I should be more generous, but I'm just not sure how I can make it work? You know, it's like that. And so when we reach or read in the scriptures about those who take the big steps, we go like, how can anyone do that? In Hebrews 11, we have a whole celebrity list of role models of faith. And when we hear that, we go like, how? How could they do it? But they aren't any different. They're human beings. And we sometimes think the ancients had so much more clarity, but in fact, they often had less information than we do. We're going to look at that in this series. We're going to meet people from long ago through whom God displayed faith in action. And along with it is going to come our doubts. It's natural for us when we move to that opening and are about to jump to ask the what questions. What if? What if I don't make it home? What about? What happens when? So we're going to talk about that today You know, something like the giving. What if I give a large gift and then I don't have enough to make the rent? What if I stay in this relationship with my spouse who never comes around? I might be sad but miserable for the best years of my life. When we ask those, we are scared. And you know, one of the reasons we don't embrace everything in the Scriptures is because we are afraid. So His faithfulness is what balances us. His faithfulness balances against every question. Page 11, you'll find that I'm going to talk about God's command and God's promise. God's commands are always good, and God's promises are always guaranteed. God's command is good. Abraham became an icon of faith when he didn't even know what was coming. The Lord picked him. The Lord came to him. And as we start now in Genesis chapter 12, here's how Abraham's story began. The Lord said to Abram, "Leave your country, your people, and your father's household, and go to the land I will show you." The question for you today is, how do some people do it? And I think a good place to start is go and review the life of someone that has that status. We call him the father of faith because his name, Av, means father. Father of many nations. God gave him that name and that role. So we look at Abraham and Sarah in their journey. Now they are of great status because, if you remember, all Christians through the New Testament call Abraham and Sarah the parents of our faith. And all of the Jews through the Old Testament relate to him blood-wise. They are the people of the Hebrews from Abraham. And a surprise is that all the Muslims claim him as father as well. Did you know that there are 36 chapters dedicated to Abraham in the Quran? So when we talk about this, let's kind of paint the picture a little bit for you. 4,000 years ago, what you have is, in fact, someone who is very much like us, working, has relationships, just doing life. He's already enjoyed a successful life, 75 years old. But the Lord has gifted him with something more than just riches. A wife, 10 years younger, named Sarai, who is so beautiful that everybody wants to crowd around her. All of the rulers would actually want her to come. They wanted to dine and wine and dine with her so that they could perhaps woo her into something. And so there were paparazzi of the day all around, right? Maybe if the media got a hold of it, they would name them one. Sabraham? I don't know if that works back then. But what I do know is that as they were taking off, you had the picture of a camel and of wealth. You have a celebrity person that has a lot of fame. He's happy. He's successful. He's settled. And everything is going great until one day God asks Abram to jump. You won't hear it yet because I haven't read it yet in the text. But here's verse 4. So Abram left, as the Lord had told him. And I want you to see this a little bit. God put the challenge, trust me, in front of them as a couple. And I really think that if you modernize it, it sounds kind of a little bit astounding. He gets a text from God that says, Abraham, I want you to leave. Leave what? Well, everything. Your family, your home country. And he goes, and go where? Smiley face comes back. I won't tell you right now. But the good news is, Abram, you're going to have a huge, wonderfully blessed family. And he says, but God, I don't even have a son. And God says, I know. But I'm old. I know. And Sarah, she's, well, oldish. I know, I'm aware. And the dialogue must have been rather unusual, don't you think? Imagine what he's thinking. He probably is going to write back, if you use text language, LOL, God, are you serious? But that's not the real picture. As a married man, I would really like to have seen the interaction when he came home and when he interacts with his sweetheart and he says to her, "Hey, Sarah, guess what? I got a text from a special person today." "Who?" "God." "Oh, really? That's cool. What did he say?" "He said, 'We're moving.'" "Oh, that's nice. Where are we going?" And Abraham says, "I don't know." "Okay, and but he says, God says that we're going to have this big family and we're going to be blessed." And then he has to answer, "Well, nope. I asked him that. I don't know, but don't worry. I didn't say old, Sarah. I said oldish. So can I go gas up the camels and get ready?" You see, Abraham had more than you might imagine on his plate. He obeys. While he is providing for his own family, he has servants and their families to provide for. And in the midst of all this, you might say, this is going to be pretty complicated. He's not a 22-year-old backpacking across Europe and that he can just pick up and go. In fact, if you understand the language, he has a lot to lose. That's because Lot was his nephew. Ask someone after church, you know, if we just said go and didn't even specify where you're going, can you imagine this? He's going to say to Sarah, "We're going to move 500 miles. That's 19 marathons. He's going to put her on a camel, and they're going to keep riding until they stop. And then they're going to live there. This was a huge request of God. And here's the story continuing. Abraham left as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife, Sarai, his nephew, Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan, and they arrived there. Abraham just jumps. In our real text that comes from Hebrews 11, it states it this way. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. Have you ever seen a small child on the edge of a pool about to jump? Now, you've got to get this in perspective. They have no body fat, and so they're always, it's cold by the water. They're shivering away, and they're looking at the water, and they're thinking, that water's taller than me, and if I go in there, I could drown. These floaties probably aren't going to work, and I might not see my third birthday. But then they jump. Why? Because there's a big person whose shoulders are above the water, a mom or a dad that's with arms out beckoning, "Jump, I'll catch you." And then after they first go in and under the water, what do? "Can I do it again?" You see, Abraham and Sarah went in faith. And the equation key, I hope you don't miss this, is that Abraham came to the conclusion that the who was greater than the what. Now let's look at the promises. God's promises can always be trusted because they are guaranteed. God's person and his activity define his divine name. He is the God of grace. He's the God that wants to bless. And unless you read this text closely, you might miss it. Verses 2 and 3 of Genesis. "I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you." You see, there's the God that is going to give the command, but he guarantees something. He says, I am with you. And that was a name that would come out later. Abraham would call upon the name of the Lord, and we don't even know what name he used, because the name of God was not revealed until that burning bush. Remember when Moses said, "Who should I say sent me?" And God said, "I am. Tell him I am sent you." Now, you may know that that's the Hebrew name Jehovah, the four letters. the letters that make up the name of God's grace. He is the gracious, wonderful, loving God. I am. Not was, not will be, but am in the present. And in fact, you can also pronounce that in the way they pronounce it in Hebrew as Yahweh, though the Israelites would never pronounce his name. Yahweh, I learned a ditty when I was a small child. The world, it says, is go your way. But we say, no way, Yahweh. And in essence, the name of God is a God that is capsulized in Exodus 34. In Exodus 34, we have what's called the gospel in the nutshell. And it reads, the Lord, the Lord, and that name, Lord, has capital letters. Are you aware that in the Psalms throughout the NIV 1984, that you have in front of you, not all translations do this, but that translation shows the name Jehovah by capitalizing the four letters. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God. God is compassionate, which means his love is extended out when we don't deserve it, when we don't even know if we want it. The compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger. If you think about it, how often shouldn't have God been angry over your sins? How many sins did you bring back again that you had said you would never do again? But God will forgive you because he can. And he says, I am the Lord. I love that phrase that says, abounding in faithfulness, maintaining love. It is God who does that. And then his promises go on to show that with Abraham. God's prophetic promises define history. He called Abraham and he said, I'm going to bless all nations through you. Now, I've never been to Israel, but some friends have. And one of them said, when they got to the site where they think Jesus was crucified, it's hard to determine, but they put all of the history into that one place. And the Americans who gathered together had tears because they thought of all that Jesus did and went through to suffer for their sake. And he said as he was going to move away from that spot back to a corner where the Americans, the group that he was with, were going to have a worship service, he passed Nigerians. He could hear them in their language. He didn't recognize the song, but they were obviously singing praise, many of them weeping. And they came by, the second group was South Koreans. And you could hear, that was amazing grace, but it was in a different language. And then he said he got to the Americans and they worshiped. And they were filled with an awareness of what God had done in his son. God declares himself to be the faithful, compassionate, loving God. Now, sometimes an analogy might work to deepen our understanding of it. I use a story of a Cherokee father. He led his 12-year-old son out into the woods, not just a little ways, but 15 miles back into the furthest remote area because his son was going to become a man. What the Cherokees did was they put father and son together very far away. And so through the ritual that had been done with him, he led his son out into this faraway woods, and he told him about all the differences, that in this part of the woods there were bigger and more dangerous animals, that it was a place where you may never return from if you're not careful. But he said, I'm with you. He took him to an opening, and in that clearing there was a stump. He sat him down on the stump, and he put a blindfold on him. It was mid-afternoon, and he said, son, when you leave this stump tomorrow morning and the sun has risen, you will be a man. Are you excited? He goes, yes. And you know that I'm your dad, and I would always do what's best for you. I love you. You know that. Yes. And that I will take care of you. Yes, I believe that. And while he was still shaking his head, he could hear his dad step away a long ways off into the woods. And at first that didn't bother him too much. In the sunshine, he's going to become a man. He's excited, and the hours tick on, and he became a little less confident. when the mosquitoes came out, and then the sun began to come down and it was getting cool, and the night noises arose, the animals, he became a little more jittery. And even then he began to hear the big animals. And then he wasn't just dreaming. He wasn't just pretending anymore. He could hear something very large cracking and moving right then left, but coming his way. And it got closer and closer, and he began to shake, and he's wondering, what is going to attack me? Dad, I can't stay here any longer. I'm going to die here. And after he had gotten his fears to the highest mountain, he jumped off of the stump and he pulled off his blindfold and he came face to face with his dad. And he looked at him and he said, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be on the stump with the blindfold on. And he said, what are you doing here? And he said, well, what I'm doing here is what my dad did. I am protecting you. I told you I would always be here. Don't you trust me? Now go back, sit down, put the blindfold on, and you are becoming a man. Have faith. You know, I think that every one of us has a 15,000-foot moment. And people sometimes stop measuring the depth of the water and begin to measure the depth of God's faithfulness. Not what could happen, but what God promises. And Jesus will say it in the Sermon on the Mount. He'll say, don't worry, your heavenly Father knows what you need. No humanly devised answer, like a GPS, is going to get you where you want to go. Now, I've even trusted the GPS and it didn't take me where I thought I was going to go. But what you do have is G-O-D. God is with you. God is on your side. God is directing. And what you need to do is stop thinking about the what and concentrate on the who. Like Psalm 91 will say, he will guard you in all your ways. And I've provided three psalms there that you need to get very familiar with, along with Psalm 23. God has got it. He says, I always have had it. I always will, because I always am. One last association. His name is Rocky, and my early ministry in Texas came down from Leveland, a little north of Lubbock. He was a single man that was working and trying to make ends meet when we had a stewardship presentation. And he came back to me and said, you know, Pastor, I just can't do it. I don't think I can be that generous, because I don't know where my next dollar is going to make it. I can't put that much on the table and expect to live, but I'm going to try. Several months later, one of the other leaders read his statement to the congregation. Here's what he said. To be honest, I worry less now when I'm giving money than before when I didn't. And he said, I didn't always know where it was going to come from, but it always came. You see, for all of us, there's a moment. The door flies open. It's blue sky out there in front of us. You're going into a place you've never been before, but you can. You can be confident, because he says, I am. I am with you always. Amen.